Welcome to Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, on another day filled with an enormous amount of news. I believe that Donald Trump has warped the time-space continuum. Time cannot contain all the stories that he and his cronies create. Later in the program, Donald Trump pushes for extreme betting. You're going to be shocked, not of the primary terrorists in this country, which is right-wing extremists, but of Muslims. Oh wow, couldn't have seen that coming. He politicizes a tragedy, which I thought for sure that after Vegas we weren't doing, but apparently it turns out we are. So that's a little bit later in the program. There's a bombshell in the Papadopoulos papers. We're going to tell you about that and how it can explode all over Donald Trump. Speaking of the Trumps, Donald Trump Jr. with one of the dumbest talking points you've ever heard. That's an hour two. Manafort with a ridiculous password, which is hilarious, and is let alone his three passports. It is an amazing amount of information in today's show. And then in the second hour, along with the Donald Trump Jr. tweet, there's an explosive revelations about Brett Ratner and what a bad guy he is, and the courage of women like Olivia Munn coming forward to talk about it. So that is all in today's show. But I start with exciting news first. You know what that means? We've got exciting news. All right, here it is. Justice Democrats now merging with all of us. All right, look, people wanted unity among progressives. We got it. So Just Democrats have now joined up forces with several different groups. We talked about Brand New Congress before. Now all of us has joined Just Democrats. All of us are the folks who launched WeWillReplaceYou.org, and they were among the several different groups who were looking to keep corporate Democrats in check and hold them accountable. Well, that's exactly what Just Democrats are doing. So now, united progressives fight back against the establishment. Sometimes it will have to be the Democratic establishment because they are far, far too conservative and too conciliatory towards Republicans. But eventually, obviously, the idea is to get to the Republicans and run real campaigns, populist progressive campaigns against the Republicans so that we can actually win. Unfortunately, the corporate Democrats have a terrible, terrible track record. They've lost 69 out of 99 state legislatures, which is an amazing stat. They've lost the House of Representatives, they lost the Senate, they lost the White House to Donald Trump, they lost the Supreme Court. So get out of the way, get out of the way. Here come real progressives and the real Justice League. So let me give you a couple of quotes from the folks involved here. Just first of all, Waleed Shaheed, who is now was one of the co-founders of All of Us, now the press director for Justice Democrats, says, "We believe the Democratic Party needs to stand with working class Americans of all races against the billionaires and politicians who divide and conquer us by pitting neighbor against neighbor." Well, we're not going to stand for that anymore, and I love it. Max Berger was the other founder of All of Us, and he is now also with the Justice Democrats. Shoykat Chakrabarty, who is executive director of Justice Democrats, says, "With all of us on our team, our number of supporters just doubled. Our grassroots-backed infrastructure is expanding to challenge the establishment's billionaire-backed infrastructure, and our populist message is already stronger than their lack of a message." Now, these two groups are among the people who helped to write the People's Platform, along with Our Revolution. So we are forming a united front here. We are very, very clear. First of all, we won't stand for corruption. So if you're taking corporate PAC money, we've got no interest. We're going to run uncorrupted candidates. And right now, the Just Democrats have 29 candidates. Soon that number will grow even higher. In fact, tomorrow on the Young Turks, we have an exclusive at 6 p.m. Eastern at the top of the show. We will announce the new candidate against Senator Dianne Feinstein. And she is, in a lot of ways, the epitome of the corporate Democrats. She did two town halls recently in California where she said she's not ready for Medicare for all at this stage. She's been in government nearly half of a century. How long is it going to take you to get ready for Medicare for all? It's a preposterous statement. Guess what she did? A week after giving those town halls, she went and collected checks from the healthcare industry. She cashed them in as campaign contributions and then told the voters of California, no, I'm never going to fight for you on healthcare. I'm not going to fight for you on universal healthcare coverage or for Medicare for all. And the list goes on and on. She's for the death penalty. She's voted for not only the Iraq war, but for Bush's tax cuts for the rich. No, no more. No more corporate Democrats. If you're not willing to fight Republicans, you got to get out of the way. Now the progressives have unified and we are coming and we're coming 100 miles an hour. I love that all of us and wewillreplaceyou.org is now part of the team. You want unity. That's real unity. Not one where we bow our heads to Democratic Party establishment or to the Democratic consultants or lobbyists. This is where we actually represent the people. So go to justdemocrats.com for more information on this. Tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern, the new progressive candidate who is going to defeat Dianne Feinstein. You're going to love that. And in fact, we're going to have election coverage. Yes, it's about a year before the 2018 elections, and yes, we are beginning on the Young Turks tomorrow, Thursday. Not only will we have that announcement, and we'll have a regular show, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, but 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern, a special 3-hour election coverage where we will feature more than half a dozen Justice Democratic candidates, some here in the studio from California and some through Skype from all across the country. Here come the progressives fighting for real change. Come and join us and let's go win. All right, that's your important announcement that I want to do for you guys. Let's take a quick break here. John Iderol is going to join me next. Anna's coming later, but we've got Donald Trump politicizing the attacks in New York. And I will tell you something, we're not going to let their hypocrisy stand. So all of this ass kissing for the NRA, and oh, don't politicize, just thoughts and prayers. Now there's a terrorist attack, they rush into politicize. We're going to kick their ass when we come back. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur, John Iderol with you guys. That was a quick segment, so we have two quick tweets for you guys. Joseph S. says, Bruce Wayne will soon be running as a Justice Democrat. He's the candidate that Dems deserve, but not the one the establishment wants. Now, we do have a dramatic announcement for who the candidate is going to be. That's going to be tomorrow at the top of the show, so don't miss it. 6 p.m. Eastern, right here, tytnetwork.com/live. But I can tell you now, it will not be Bruce Wayne. Okay, that would be awesome, and one day. I Am Sock says, just Democrats and all of us, too strong.
Oh God, it's gone one step farther.
too strong. The first two was spelled T-W-O, and I like how that was framed. Agreed, let's go win. All right, what's next?
Okay, the news is next. Trump wasted no time following yesterday's terror attack in New York City. Initially talking about how this was proof that we need to stop people from the Middle East coming into our country. Then an aide explained that Uzbekistan is not in fact actually in the Middle East. And so he backed off a little bit and talked more generally about how extreme vetting needs to be stepped up, saying that being politically correct is fine, but not for this. I'm assuming that's sarcasm there at the end, because he doesn't think it's fine. And so then the morning came and he got his daily intelligence briefing from Fox and Friends. And they told him about this program, the Diversity Visa Lottery Program. And they talked about it in depth, especially the diversity part for reasons you might be able to guess. Here is a little mashup.
As you've stated clearly, the diversity program on the visas has got to be shut down.
Talk a little bit about the correct diversity visa program, diversity visa lottery.
The fact that we would have a diversity program open to allow people to come in, it's insane.
Chuck Schumer attached to the immigration bill back in 1990. It has been suggested that Chuck Schumer, now a U.S. senator, was one of the sponsors.
Lebanon is where you're from, right?
Yes, that's right.
They are part of the visa lottery program.
The diversity visa program, the reason this was even established is to offer to countries with low rates of immigration into the United States.
Lottery system, I've always been against it because it's a random system to bring people into the United States. It's not merit-based.
His diversity visa proposal, also known as the green card lottery.
Is it time to really get both Democrats and Republicans to end this program today?
How much more diversity do you want?
And we got to make sure that we are doing the vetting. And that's what's failed. We've failed to vet people.
Calling for higher vetting in high threat areas. Eventually the travel ban came out of that.
The president last night, Dan, suggested we needed more super vetting, essentially. Is he right?
To abolish this program and put a merit-based system into the United States.
What do we need? A diversity program on visas.
Diversity visa program.
Vetting is the answer.
The president also has tweeted out about how we need a better vetting, extreme vetting. He's right about that, isn't he?
There would be a component of vetting. Should it be lottery? Should it be even normal visa?
When you go overseas and you hear about vetting, don't for a second think you're walking into the Syrian Department of Motor Vehicles and getting a list of parking tickets this person's got for 15 years.
I don't know why we even have this anymore, considering the fact that one of the 9/11 pilots applied for this twice.
But what is missing is basically this one program of vetting.
Vetting what? What are you going to ask for a library card in Uzbekistan?
Well, I think there are a lot of people who now are learning about the diversity visa program. They don't like it.
How about a United States first immigration program?
The previous administration did not choose to have vetting.
Get rid of the visa, that this lottery program.
So would a United States first immigration program prioritize people coming here from the United States?
Okay, so let's break down all the absurdities. First, I want to go back to what John said, which was really funny. He's like, Uzbekistan, that's the problem with the Middle East. It's in Central Asia, idiot. That's the problem with the Central Asian republics that are part of Russia's sphere of influence. Wait, no, I meant Uzbekistan is great. Except for the Muslims. They're almost all Muslim. Okay, they're bad, but somehow they're associated with Putin, so I might have to retract these comments later. Okay, so then we go to the green card lottery. Now, it's not really true that Schumer was necessarily in favor of the green card lottery. We'll get into that. Okay, but I am. I think the green card lottery is fantastic.
How much more diversity do you want? By the way, an angry man screaming, how much more diversity you want, is peak Fox News.
That's right. And of course, getting minorities to do it is also Fox News 101. We have brought a Lebanese guy. He looks like and he speaks like he's from the Middle East. In reality, of course, he's paid by think tanks and other organizations to sell out everyone who looks and speaks like him. Mm-hmm. And so we brought this shill here to speak out against everyone else from his neck of the woods. Now, if we'd of course killed the diversity program before his ass got in here, he'd be in the middle of Beirut somewhere. But since he's already made it, he'd like to burn the bridge down right after him, because that's the kind of people that Fox News loves, right? And then we'll get a African-American guy on here, go, what kind of diversity do we need? Yeah. I already got paid by Fox News, I'm counting the cash. I don't need any more diversity, I already got paid. Okay, that's very nice for you. You must be so goddamn proud. Yeah. Now let's go to the substance here of, I thought we weren't politicizing tragedies. So this comes as a giant shock to me, because I remember this 8 people were killed here. That is, and we talked about it yesterday. I got friends in New York who scared me half to death because the kids were attacked and they've got kids, etc. So now in Vegas, though, we had 59 people killed. We had over 500 people that were injured, 600 people shot overall. But don't politicize.
Don't
politicize.
I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, Sarah Huckabee Sanders addressed this today. Let's watch.
In the hours, in fact, the days after the horrific shooting in Las Vegas, the president repeatedly said, now is not the time to talk about policy. Now is not the time to talk about politics. That's for another time. Right now, we need to mourn the dead. Yet this morning, the president launched into a political argument with Senator Chuck Schumer on Twitter, literally hours after this incident yesterday. Why was he so quick to go the political route and point fingers at Chuck Schumer for the fact that this person was in the country at all?
Well, look, this wasn't about going the political route. This is something that, frankly, the president's been talking about for a long time. This isn't a new policy. This isn't a new position. This isn't a new conversation. The president has been talking about extreme vetting and the need for that for the purpose of protecting the citizens of this country since he was a candidate, long before he was ever president. This isn't a new argument. This isn't a new position. And this wasn't new for the president to speak about it.
Okay, good. So you can have immunity to not politicize things so long as you talked about the issue before the attack. So thankfully, we've been talking about gun control here for any number of years, so we're free. We have the immunity idol.
Yes. what? Gun control was new after Vegas, apparently. Mm-hmm. Nobody was talking about it before. And right after Vegas, some scoundrels tried to talk about it. And then, of course, the Republicans had thoughts and prayers that are really, really important. And the only thing you should do after a tragedy, all of a sudden, no thoughts and prayers here, nothing but complete political action.
Hold on. So there, she doesn't actually define really why it's different between the Vegas response and this. But she is going to, in this next video, wait until you see what her rationale is.
I want to follow up on the question that John was asking you earlier. You're making the case that these are not new policies he's talking about. And yet the question still remains. He is delving into a policy and political discussion. And he and you were very clear after the Las Vegas shooting that it wasn't appropriate to talk about policy. So what's the difference now?
I said it wasn't appropriate to politicize the conversation, which I don't believe we are. We're talking about protecting American lives.
The president invoked Chuck Schumer's name. So how can you argue that it's not a political argument that he's making?
Look, Senator Schumer has supported these opposing policies, and I think that that is a very basic fact.
Okay, so there's a second rule. So you had to have been talking about it before the attack, and you can only target people who are opposing the things that you think would solve the problem. I think we can find some Republican politicians who that would qualify for gun control. Mm-hmm. But I am glad to know that in this case, we're talking about saving American lives. Those of you out there who thought that maybe after Vegas, we could at the very least eliminate bump stocks and things like it, whose sole purpose is to allow you to effectively break the law by creating an automatic weapon. That wasn't supposed to save American lives, nothing like that.
30,000 people die every year from guns in America. So you want to talk about saving American lives? And this is what really enrages me about the attention span in this country. Now here, you've got the press doing a pretty good job of holding them accountable on their hypocrisy. And yes, the Vegas shooting certainly got plenty of coverage. But when there's terrorist attacks from right wingers, it's always a one-off. It's a mentally deranged person, etc. And okay, but when you have an attack by a Muslim person, it's wall to wall. We have to change all the policies. We have to attack all the politicians on the other side. We have to change everything.
Change it today, they said on Fox.
So what I would like is consistency. So what would be the consistent thing to do? First of all, if you want to save and protect American lives, the first thing you should talk about is guns, because that costs 30,000 lives a year. That is 10 9/11s every single year. So if you want to prioritize, that should be your number one priority. How do we minimize the amount of lives lost from guns? Because it is an epidemic of gun violence in this country. Okay. So then, secondly, when you go to terrorism, should you discuss this? Of course you should. Should you try to find a way to combat what happened in New York? Of course you should. We all live here. Nobody wants to die. So we should fight terrorism. Now, when you go to fight terrorism, I think there's a good argument to be made on whether you should focus most of your efforts on right-wingers or Muslim radicals. Now, there are more right-wing terrorist attacks in this country than Muslim terrorist attacks by a good number. And you could ask the FBI, Homeland Security, those are actual facts, and there's no question about them. On the other hand, Muslim radicals, unfortunately, are acting at a higher per capita ratio. So it's an interesting debate as to where we should spend our resources. And I would argue both right? And maybe in equal proportion, even though there's more right wing attacks. Mm-hmm. I can understand wanting to concentrate resources on a smaller number of individuals. That doesn't mean you should invade their mosques and houses and schools, but legitimate investigations with warrants, that would be great, so that we can stop radicals of all stripes from killing our fellow citizens. So on the issue of politicizing, I might have a controversial opinion, which is, no, I think that all of these tragedies are political, and we should have political discussions about them immediately. It would be, the Republicans are hypocritical. They say, if it's guns, don't ever talk about it. Wait several weeks or months or years or never, right? But if it's terrorism, if it's right-wing terrorism, it's a lone wolf, never discuss it. If it's Muslim terrorism, let's go nuts.
If it's right-wing, say something about mental health, then do nothing about mental health.
That's exactly
right. Then move on.
That's right. Now, whereas we are consistent, if it's guns, you should do something about guns. If it's terrorism, you should do something about terrorism. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't wait a week or 2 weeks or a month to talk about it. You should talk about it now. Yeah. Eight people just died in New York. I keep saying I got friends and family in New York. I don't want anybody to, and it doesn't matter if I don't have any friends or family. The right-wing terrorists who killed people attacking a Jewish community center in the middle of Kansas. I don't know anybody in Kansas, but I don't want that happening. Yeah. And we should talk about it right afterwards.
Well, and certainly if you're going to say that your president is the guy who tells it like it is, but then when he actually tells it like it is, or at least he's politicizing it, that's what he's doing. You then say that he's not doing that. When in fact he's as politicizing it as you can. Like, you can politicize something as in a shooting just happened. I'd say in general we need gun control. That's like level one. Level two would be saying here's a specific law that we should pass. Level three is attacking a particular politician for a vote he made decades ago. There's no more political than that, but he won't actually own up to it. And as you said, there are these different types of terrorists. Now what's interesting about this is their response isn't just political, that's not the problem with it. It's that it's nonsensical. Stopping that program wouldn't have stopped this guy because there's no evidence that this guy radicalized before coming here. The extreme vetting that you want isn't gonna catch many of these people because they're not radicals when they come over here. They're radicalized in the United States. And that's not just true for people who are Muslim, that's true for the right wingers as well. Obviously they grow up here, they're radicalized here, and then they go in and shoot up a theater or a casino or whatever here. So what you have to do is track down, you have to stop the radicalization if you can, and if not, you need to investigate it here. And so what would you need to do that? You would need to fund programs that do that here. But not only are they not increasing funding of those programs, as we've reported throughout the year, they've in fact pulled funds from that. For the exact sort of programs that would stop the Vegas shooting and things of that nature. That's what you need. Not to just have some stupid emotional knee-jerk anti-immigrant response to every time a single person is killed in this country.
And that Lebanese guy on Fox News claimed that the last administration did no vetting at all. What a preposterous lie. We have the toughest vetting process in the entire world. It takes 18 months for a refugee to get through our vetting process, literally the longest in the world. And that was true under Obama, Bush, etc. So for them to claim that we're not doing vetting is preposterous.
And ask yourself if you want to put a guy in charge of extreme vetting who allowed a guy to be his campaign chairman, who is beholden to Russian and Ukrainian oligarchs and has broken any number of federal laws, and all of this just flew over our very wise president's head.
Yeah, all of a sudden when it comes to you, no vetting at all.
No.
Oh, well, how could I know that all these different guys working for me were tied to Putin and the Russians? There's no way of knowing. I love extreme vetting. Oops.
There's another angle to this, by the way. So we found out today how they're going to respond to the attack yesterday, and it's not just going after this diversity visa lottery program. Trump also told reporters today that he would consider sending the terrorists to Guantanamo Bay. That's good. And the White House also said it considers him an enemy combatant because he was, of course, snatched from the streets of Fallujah. No, he's a guy that was in New York. What are you talking about? He's an enemy combatant. And as I tweeted earlier today, just like I want you to like come to grips with the idea that Donald Trump gets to label people enemy combatants now.
So a little while back, a couple of right wingers went and shot a couple of police officers in Nevada. And they said they were doing it for political reasons, and they laid the Gadsden flag on their dead bodies. Mm-hmm. Now, should we have called them enemy combatants? They wanted to kill our government officials because they hated this country so much. And they had a clear right-wing political opinion, and that's why they did it. Now, you might have heard about that story or barely ever heard about it at all, because if it's non-Muslim, we don't go wall to wall with coverage nonstop, and not every politician is talking about it.
They're like a day.
Oh yeah, right-wing terrorists murdered cops. I don't care about blue lives at all, let's just move on, right? So that's basically how that story was treated. Should we have taken those guys and put them into Gitmo and treat them as enemy combatants? Of course not, because they're here, it's on American soil, they committed an act. You see, unlike Donald Trump, I believe in our justice system. Oh boy, it's got a lot of issues, and I wanna make it much, much better. And I have specific constructive fixes that I think we could do to the justice system. But overall, do I believe in that defendants should have rights? Yes. Do I think they should have habeas corpus? Yes. I believe in our constitution and our justice system. I believe it could bring those monsters in Nevada to justice, and I believe that it could bring this monster in New York to justice. And if you don't believe in our justice system and you don't believe in our former government, then you certainly shouldn't lead it.
So what do you think about him announcing today that he thinks our justice system is a joke and a laughing stock?
Well, then,
do you think he's talking about those well-reasoned criticisms of systemic racism in our justice department?
Yeah, yeah.
Or do you think it has something to do with the fact that we realized this week that three of his campaign staff, including the former campaign chairman, have been arrested?
Yeah, he's I'm sure talking about the two-tier justice system where people with affluenza are getting off for killing people, but if you're poor and you smoked a joint, you're going to go to prison for 20 years.
He's probably talking about overcrowded prisons and the fact that DAs are overworked
and how they're giving people $1 a day to work. That's basically slave labor. Okay. Yeah. No, he's not talking about any of that. He's saying I'm powerful and my elitist friends were arrested for doing something terribly wrong. How dare you arrest the rich and powerful? Yeah. And then this guy who is a terrible human being who should be brought to justice in New York where he did the crimes. It's like, I don't believe in our justice system. I hate the American justice system. That's what Trump said. He said it's a laughing stock. And John gave you the exact quotes there. So he hates our system. And he says, I don't believe it. And he wants to send it to Gitmo because Gitmo is lawless. He believes in lawlessness more than he believes in America and our Constitution. Yeah. This guy's not fit to be our leader because he doesn't even believe in the concept of the country.
Do you want to go on to Chuck Schumer's response or do you need to take our second break?
Let's go to Schumer's response.
Okay, so Trump attacked not only the diversity visa lottery program, but a Democratic senator, Chuck Schumer specifically. Chuck Schumer responded both on social media and on the Senate floor. First, his tweet, I guess it's not too soon to politicize a tragedy. That's a good point there. But then he went on to say this.
I have always believed that immigration is good for America. I believe it today. President Trump, instead of politicizing and dividing America, which he always seems to do at times of national tragedy, should be bringing us together and focusing on the real solution, anti-terrorism funding, which he proposed to cut in his most recent budget. So, I am calling on President Trump to rescind his proposed cuts to this vital anti-terrorism funding immediately.
That is a great example of the sort of thing that for whatever reason will not reach 32% of this country. That he literally cut the funding for these sorts of anti-terrorism investigations. And if you were to ask his core, his base, they would say he's the only one who's going to defend us. As he literally takes the money away so that he can give it to billionaires.
You know why? Because what's today? Wednesday? Because tomorrow he should go on CNN, MSNBC, ask Fox to get him on and say it again. Then on Friday, do it again. Then on Sunday shows, do it again. And then hold a piece of paper that shows it and says, hey, this is what's going on, you guys. This is part of their bill to defund terrorists, terrorism, anti-terrorism programs. And say it again, and then say it again for the next 2 months. So they go, I wish Chuck Schumer would stop talking about this anti-terrorism thing that Donald Trump keeps cutting out of his budget. What's in his budget again? Oh, the anti-terrorism program that you keep cutting. Make sure they're tired of hearing it. You know those, I've been listening to a lot of talk radio lately because of the baseball, the World Series. And there's ads that run. They go, hey, contact us. That's again, that's johnplumber.com. 1-888-johnplumber.com. 1-888-johnplumber.com. And my kid's in the backseat going, why is he saying this 100 times? I said, so that you'll never forget it.
Yeah.
Same thing. Just do it over and over again.
Although ironically, that might not have worked with you because I'm pretty sure 1-800-johnplumber.com is not the right thing. Okay.
If you could set he's cutting anti-terrorism funds to that Cars for Kids tune, I don't think the country will ever get past it.
Okay, but to JR's point, so you might be thinking, if you, especially if you're a MAGA guy and you got the red hat, wait a minute, I thought we really did want to fight the terrorists and the bad guys. And I thought, I mean, at a minimum, don't we all hate Muslims together? Right? I mean, that's like the core of MAGA, isn't it? So why? Why are they doing that? And why did they add $70 billion to the defense budget, which was already gargantuan? It was already larger than eight other militaries combined. Doesn't that cover it? No, because the defense budget goes towards defense contractors. So they make really expensive planes that we often don't use, really expensive submarines that half the time we don't use. And that is crony capitalism. Now, fighting terrorism, it's expensive, but maybe doesn't go to the right places, right? And why do they have to keep cutting the budget? Because they've got to finance the tax cuts. So tax cuts for the rich are a way higher priority for Trump and his administration than actually fighting terrorism. Yeah. That's why he cut those funds. And he figures, hey, it doesn't matter what I cut and what I actually do, and it doesn't matter how many trillions of dollars I give to my friends at the cost of your safety, because I'm just gonna say on Twitter how I'm, we gotta do extreme vetting. I hate, the Muslims are the problem. I don't actually have to do anything about it. I just have to say it, and my knucklehead guys, I think that the red hats prevent the neurons from firing inside the heads. I think that that is
I think part of their secret cosmic purpose. Energy.
Yeah. So all I have to do is scream about it on Twitter, and they'll be like, "Oh, good enough, good enough. Yeah, I like it. Yeah. He dislikes the same guys I dislike."
This country.
Okay. Okay. All right. We got to take a break, right? All right. The bombshell inside the Papadopoulos plea. That might actually be enormous trouble for Donald Trump when we return. All right, back on the Young Tourist, Cenk and John with you guys. Let me do some tweets. Daniel Pareja says, but Vegas was a white man with a gun. Oh, okay. And I know that he's being sarcastic. And N-Venture says, I think extreme betting means rich people only. Diversity means poor people. Probably right. Because remember Trump said, look, if they're going to contribute to the economy, there's certain visas that Kushner tries to use for his business, where if you can pay $500,000, they just let you into the country.
Yeah.
I got bad news for them, by the way. A lot of the bad guys in the Middle East have $500,000.
Yeah.
And the guys that did 9/11 were all sitting in first class. So I don't think that they actually care about your safety. It's some chances they just care about the money. So exactly right by that commenter. Bud Askins writes, there needs to be better vetting program for hiring Fox News contributors. And Mr. Charles says, if extreme vetting will solve terrorism, maybe Fox News should try extreme sexual harassment training. Ooh, burn. I like it. I like that a lot. Nice job. Okay, guys, remember tomorrow is a big announcement, but I also want you to about the Just Democratic candidate who is going to run against Dianne Feinstein. You've seen that person on air before here.
We need that alien.
Yeah, I think I got it.
Do you?
But also, we've got at least seven other Just Democratic candidates that are going to come here. Me, John, Jimmy are going to do a three-hour program after the main show tomorrow, so 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't miss it, including, I believe, the guy who almost beat Daryl Issa last time and will beat him this time. Okay, let's go forward.
More news for you. It can be tough to keep up with all the revelations coming out of this week's arrest of multiple Trump campaign staffers, so we're going to jump right to the biggest one, and it has to do with George Papadopoulos. This is coming from the statement of the offense that was revealed earlier this week. On or about March 31st of 2016, Papadopoulos attended a, quote, national security meeting in D.C. with Trump and other foreign policy advisors for the campaign. When he introduced himself to the group, he stated in sum and substance that he had connections that could arrange, that could help arrange a meeting between then candidate Trump and President Putin. Now, this is going to be shorthand for us because we also know from other sections of it that he had barraged various members of the campaign with emails talking about wanting to set up a meeting. Then, after he had been told by his connections in Russia that they would do a meeting, asking for them to send people or possibly him. But this is the important one for today because this is at a meeting where Trump was present, as well as Jeff Sessions and others. Now, Clovis, which is a name you're going to hear in the near future, because he's up for the Agriculture Department, I believe. We'll see about that. And others at the meeting immediately expressed doubts about the wisdom of the idea, which is good. There were people saying it was not a good idea, noting that Russia was under US sanctions and denouncing the optics of a meeting with Putin. And this is coming from the New York Times. But Trump listened with interest and asked questions of Papadopoulos. Trump didn't say yes, and he didn't say no. And one person at the meeting described him as flattered by the idea. And so that's interesting that it was brought up that he has connections in Russia that could set up a meeting with Russian officials And he was he didn't say yes and he didn't say no. So it's odd that when a reporter this year asked him about possible contact between his campaign and Russian officials, he had this to say.
Could get a yes or no answer on one of these questions involving Russia. Can you say whether you are aware that anyone who advised your campaign had contacts with Russia during the course of the election?
Well, I told you General Flynn obviously was dealing, so that's one person, but he was dealing as he should have been.
During the election?
No, nobody that I know of.
So you're not aware of any contacts during the course of the election?
How many times do I have to answer this question?
Can you just say
Russia is a ruse. Yeah, I know you have to get up and ask a question, so important. Russia is a ruse.
So what you've got there is a lie. I mean, he was flattered by the idea. It was brought up during a national security meeting that the press was covering, and he was there. And now he had no idea earlier this year that any of that contact was going on. Now, you might say it's not necessarily a lie. It could just be that he forgot. He has a lot of meetings. But what you don't know about Donald Trump is that he has, in his words, one of the great memories of all time. And he just said that like a week ago. I even remember that. I don't have one of the great memories of all time, but I remember that. Now, you might say that's scary. Donald Trump is interested in possibly taking this meeting, even though his advisors are saying he shouldn't. But don't worry, there was a voice of reason in the room, and that is Jeff Sessions, then the campaign's top national security official, apparently spoke vehemently against the idea, asking others not to discuss it again. Trump did not challenge him. And so that is good news for Jeff Sessions because it makes him look like a very reasonable person. Unfortunately, it's also bad news for Jeff Sessions because he had a conversation earlier this year with Senator Al Franken that went like this.
Without divulging sensitive information, do you know about this or know what compromising personal and financial information the Russians claim to have?
Senator Franken, allegations get made about candidates all the time, and they've been made about President-elect Trump a lot sometimes. Most of them, virtually all of them, have been proven to be exaggerated or untrue. I would just say to you that I have no information about this matter. I have not been in on the classified briefings, and I'm not a member of the Intelligence Committee. I'm just not able to give you any comment on it at this time.
Okay, totally fair.
So unfortunately, that's not the video, but he was asked at that same hearing if he had any knowledge about contacts with Russian officials and what he would do if he knew about that. And he said directly he has no information about any such communication. And so in the case of Donald Trump, it's a lie to say he didn't know. Unfortunately for Jeff Sessions, it's a lie under oath to Congress, which is actually a crime.
Yeah, so I remember a president being impeached by the other party for lying under oath. And I was told that that is a very, very serious crime.
Yeah.
And there we have Jeff Sessions clearly lying under oath, saying that he had no dealings or knowledge of dealings with the Russians during the campaign. When, to his credit, he absolutely positively did know about dealings with the Russians and thought it was a bad idea.
And he was vehement about it.
Yes. So there's no, you cannot credibly claim that you forgot something that happened a couple of months ago where you had the good sense to say, we should not have Trump meet with Putin in the middle of a presidential campaign. That's insane. You insisted on it and you won the argument. But to say that you did not have knowledge of any attempts to connect with the Russians is a clear, clear, clear lie.
Yeah, he also smiled while he said it. Maybe we can input that video.
I assume that Sessions will be removed from office immediately.
And that would be for the good of the nation, actually. That's one of the bad things coming out of this. Now, there's a lot that we don't know about what Papadopoulos has done as a proactive cooperator, in the words of the justice system or the Justice Department. But there's a belief that he might have possibly been wearing a wire, that he might have been engaging in communications with other members of the campaign, the staff there. And that may be where they got some of the information about Manafort and others. And so all of that will be coming out at some point in the next weeks and months. But right off the bat, this is bad for Donald Trump. Now, thankfully for him, it's not under oath. It's simply lying to the press, which is hardly new for him. But for Jeff Sessions, it's a totally different thing. Now, when it comes to Paul Manafort and also Gates as well. We have some more information coming out of documents that were revealed yesterday. And some of these are odd, some of these are incredibly significant. Here's the significant part. The government wrote in the documents on Tuesday that Manafort and Gates, quote, have connections to Ukrainian and Russian oligarchs who have provided millions of dollars to them. And so when you hear Donald Trump repeatedly claim that there's nothing, there's no Russia in any of that, there's no Russia, well, there is. They apparently got millions of dollars from Russians. Also, despite the fact that Paul Manafort has often denied this, they say in those documents that he has staff working for his corporation in Moscow, something he has never revealed before and in fact has denied. And so that is significant as well. There's a connection for you financially at least.
Yeah. So look, Manafort's in a world of trouble. Every day we find out more of his illicit ties to Russia, which he hid, which is a huge problem because you were supposed to register as a foreign agent. And the reason is so we could know what your motivation is. And he wanted to hide his motivation because he wanted to secretly do propaganda for the Russians. And he hid a lot of things about us, what he was doing that John's going to tell you about in a sec. And then on top of that, he apparently didn't pay his taxes, laundered money. So he's got a decision to make. That's why Trump is really trying hard to avoid answering the question of whether he's going to pardon him, because he wants Manafort to think, maybe I'll pardon you. And he also wants to keep that in his back pocket in case he really, really needs to pardon Manafort, because Manafort starts to turn evidence against him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it was, I believe, yesterday that he was asked directly at one of these meetings by a reporter, are you going to pardon Paul Manafort? And he said, oh, that's it. Thank you. Thank you. And he refused to answer the question. In fact, he stopped questions from the media in response to that. So it is hardly crazy to think that he might, in fact, try to pardon Manafort. And considering the amount of evidence that they already seem to have against him about crimes that go back throughout the campaign and for years earlier, the idea that you would pardon this guy, that is a level of brazenness that I would have assumed would even go beyond Donald Trump. But there are others. Both Manafort and Gates are under house arrest. There's a reason for that. The government argued they, quote, pose a risk of flight based on the serious nature of the charges, their history of deceptive and misleading conduct, the potentially significant sentences the defendants face, the strong evidence of guilt, their significant financial resources, and their foreign connections. And they cited multiple foreign connections that they might be able to flee to and then, quote, live comfortably. And so they felt like their passports needed to be taken away so that they would not be able to flee the country and hide off somewhere else, avoiding justice.
John, which passport?
Well, all of them, actually. Much like Jason Bourne, they've got a briefcase full of them. So Manafort had 3 US passports, each under a different number. This year, Manafort traveled to Mexico, China, and Ecuador with a phone and email account registered under a fake name. Now, you can actually apparently have 3 passports. It's not strictly speaking a crime. It can be that for certain sorts of consular purposes, you might need a second passport. And there are both private and diplomatic passports. I have no reason to believe that he would have any sort of non-typical passport. But it's possible that that is not one of the areas that he has broken the law. But you do have to love having the fake phone number, the fake name for his phone number and email address. It's almost like this guy thinks that he's some sort of super spy or something. He seems to believe it too, because he also has a fondness for the James Bond inspired password Bond 007.
And by the way, for a spy, that is the world's worst password.
Yes.
How easy is that to break?
Yes.
Well, the world's worst spy.
It hurts me because I really like James Bond. Now he's ruined it a little.
Yeah. Well, he's more Dr. Evil than James Bond.
I also have to change my password now.
Well, yeah, great. He changed his. First it was password, then it was Manafort. He's like, okay, I got it. Bond 007.
Was even like 008. It wasn't like, you know, anyway. But the next one was from Russia with love.
Oh my God.
Or at least cash. I remember when we were having the warrantless wiretapping debate, we were on the side of let's not invade innocent Americans' privacy and let's follow the Constitution. Republicans were on the side of, oh, you got nothing to hide and you shouldn't worry about it. Mm-hmm. If you got nothing to hide, why do you need 3 passports?
And a fake name for your phone number.
There's some chance you had something to hide, but besides which, we're past that discussion because we now have indicted him and we have all the evidence of the things he had to hide, including tens of millions of dollars of payments from Russian oligarchs, yeah, and all of his illicit dealings that he was desperate to hide and launder.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought up the money, because I'm not going to go through all the numbers because there's a lot of them, but there is some very bizarre behavior when it comes to his net worth and also Gates, but I'm a little bit less interested in Gates. So his net worth apparently fluctuates maybe in the same way that Donald Trump's is. Donald Trump says that his net worth in part depends on his mood. That's from official financial documents.
That's true. I forgot that. That's so hilarious.
Yeah. And so from 1 month to a couple months later, at different points, Manafort disclosed his net worth as around like the mid-20s in millions, all the way up to $130 million, and back down again just in a couple months. Now, maybe this guy is just a crazy gambler. And he, you know, sometimes he gets high and sometimes he gets low, or sometimes he lies on financial disclosure forms. Even inside of 1 month, just a couple of weeks apart, his income went from the mid-20s to the mid-60s on financial like loan applications and things like that in the same month. And I believe it's Gates who applied for 50 different bank accounts inside of 1 month at one point. This is a lot of shady activity. And best case scenario, I think at this point, this is purely personal financial crimes, that this is criminal behavior where they attempted to enrich themselves and there are no policy implications, no political implications. But I don't understand why this guy would be so dead set on being involved in Donald Trump's presidential campaign if he's got this amazing racket set up that he's been operating for a number of years. Why is it that he needs to get involved with Donald Trump's campaign? And that's where the non-best case scenario gets involved. And don't forget that this is the guy, when he was in charge of Donald Trump's RNC strategy, who got them to change the part of their platform that had to do with Ukraine. And so that's a possible reason why he's getting these huge sums of money all at once.
Yeah, and as I explained earlier in the week, he took $19 million from a Russian oligarch and didn't pay it back and didn't do what he was said he was going to do. And then in some of the emails that we found out in the indictment, it was mentioned that this was a good way to get even with the Russian oligarchs.
Yeah.
And
well, maybe that's why he was traveling under a fake name. He was worried about like relaxing on a beach and drinking a polonium colada.
Yeah, and so this would make them whole. And if Manafort could deliver certain goodies for the Russian government, yeah, then maybe they're not gonna want their $19 million back. Okay.
But that can't involve Donald Trump because he just met Manafort several decades ago. And Manafort lives in his building.
And this is very important. The guy, Rick Gates, with the all the shady stuff that John just explained, Manafort's top aide. Until Monday, he was employed by one of Donald Trump's best friends, Thomas Barak Jr. And he was employed as part of his real estate company. Rick Gates doesn't know anything about real estate and has never worked in real estate.
I think these guys are shady.
You think maybe it's just a coincidence that one of Donald Trump's best friends hired Gates, who was just indicted, at a really high salary to work on something that he knows nothing about? And you think that Trump and Gates and Manafort are not connected?
That sounds like how Trump forms his cabinet.
And so finally, look, back to the pardon for a second. The reason Trump walks out without answering the pardon question is, if he says, I'm considering pardoning this guy who's connected to me, it seems to be a clear obstruction of justice, saying, I am going to help this guy get off the hook so that I don't have to face criminal justice. Yeah. And there's an excellent case to be made for obstruction of justice if Trump says that. If he says, I definitely won't pardon him, well, then Manafort thinks, well, I got nothing left. I might as well turn evidence against him. Otherwise, I'm going to potentially go to prison for decades, right? Yeah. So that's why, under no circumstances, does Donald Trump want to answer that question. By not answering the question, he's basically winking to Manafort. Remember, it's still possible. And we have a petition about this, tytnetwork.com/pardon. If he pardons anyone related to this investigation, he should be immediately impeached. It's the most clear obstruction of justice you can have. And if you let him get away with it, he'll pardon everyone, including himself, and just keep being dictator.
Yeah. Looks like we've reached the end of the hour.
We are going to end the hour on time.
You know what? It might not work, but let's try it.
Do you believe in miracles? Okay, we'll be right back with more amazing news, including Donald Trump Jr. Being a clown in his talking points and on Halloween. And then a devastating story about Brett Ratner and what he did to Olivia Munn and how that record has to be corrected. We'll talk about that when we come back.